It's time for Bleed Tech Blue Radio. This is your source for Louisiana Tech sports news. For the next 90 minutes, Bleed Tech Blue Radio goes deep inside La Tech football, basketball, and recruiting. Now here's your host, Jonathan Ford.
Welcome into Bleed Tech Blue Radio and ESPN Radio 97.7. Another hour edition of Bleed Tech Blue Radio for you this week. Jared King joining me again this week. After a couple-week hiatus.
Yeah, well, 1 week hiatus from the show. The show took a little hiatus. It's been a while.
It has been a while. Couple of sponsors.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 is brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Brister Smokehouse. Join us on the Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners hotline at 888-993-7762. That's 888-993-7762. Or, of course, you can tweet us your questions with the hashtag BTB Radio.
Well, an eventful week. In 2 days.
Certainly so. It's only Tuesday, and there's already been so much news out of Louisiana Tech, and not to, you know, toot our own horn or yank our own chain or whatever it is, but BleedTechBlue.com first on both of those stories. So,
yeah, special thanks to my sources. I was talking with Sean Isabella today via text, and it's every reporter is just as good as his. As a sources.
No doubt.
Of course, the Blake Baker will be the next defensive coordinator at Louisiana Tech, promoted from safeties coach to defensive coordinator. He will also make the move to linebackers coach. And then yesterday, Oscar Giles went to Houston.
Or back to Houston, I guess.
Back to Houston.
Yeah, Oscar Giles, defensive line coach, came over with Manny Diaz, coached a good defensive line this season, and ultimately, you know, Todd Herman from Ohio State taking over as the head coach over there, defensive coordinator left, and defensive line coach left. Houston was had a bare cupboard over there, and Oscar Giles going back, he was there as an assistant. He was an assistant head coach and defensive line coach in 2003-04 at Houston, so...
He's been there, done that, and I think Houston's close to is maybe home for Oscar. So that's something to as well. And he's getting a sizable raise to go along with it. So you can't fault a man for that. So good luck to Oscar Giles and his future endeavors. But on to Louisiana Tech, Blake Baker, I think's a great hire. A lot of Tech fans who don't necessarily know. His background probably are wondering why promote a guy that's 32 years old. Who cares how old he is? I mean, here I am, a 30-year-old hosting a radio show, and you're a 20-something-year-old and breaking news all the time as well. So it's
well, not only that, but look at Tyler Summitt, who's a year younger than I am, and he's the head coach at a Division I basketball program with a storied tradition.
And then Mike White.
Michael White is young. Tommy McClellan is in his early 30s. He's the athletic director. I don't think there's anything wrong with age. I don't necessarily believe that age has anything to do with this. I think in the short period of time that Blake Baker has held positions, he's shown what he can do. But more so than anything, I think this shows that Skip Holtz doesn't want this new defensive coordinator every year thing going on.
And he liked the scheme.
And he, yeah, well, exactly. He liked the scheme that Diaz brought because more so than anything, what Louisiana Tech fans saw last year was a result of the scheme that Manny brought. Not necessarily, of course, Manny coached it, and no one can coach it as well as Manny does, but I think if the next best guy to coach it, it's Blake Baker.
There's probably not a human being on the face of the earth that knows Manny Diaz's scheme better than Blake Baker.
Sure, outside of Diaz himself. Yeah, no doubt about it.
And he's also a really good recruiter. He's done an excellent job this season on the recruiting trail. He and Joe Sloan are basically co-recruiting coordinators this past season. They weren't that in name, but that's how it acted. Joe Sloan was kind of the recruiting coordinator for offense and Blake Baker for defense. So if he knows what Diaz was looking for on the recruiting trail, he can continue that as well.
Which may be one of the biggest factors going into this promotion outside of the scheme is the fact that, you know, when you lose a guy like Manny, you have to wonder, okay, how many of the defensive commits that Louisiana Tech has right now, and they've got some good players on that side of the football committed right now, are you going to lose those guys because now Diaz is gone? With the promotion of Blake Baker, you can go in and assure those young men, we're going to run the same scheme that we were going to run before. You will have the same role in this defense.
And we'll, in the next segment, we'll walk through those defensive commitments, and I'll tell you how I feel on each. And I, just a sneak peek, I don't feel real bad about either any of them. Will Tech lose some? Doesn't everyone down the stretch? Especially when you're sitting at as many commitments as Tech is. But when you look at, they got to hire now a safeties coach and a defensive line coach. I think a defensive line coach name to really keep an eye out for would probably be Vernon Hargraves, who was at Houston last year.
Right.
Coached with Skip Holtz at East Carolina, and or no, definitely at South Florida.
At South Florida.
His son happens to be a Florida Gator, one of Jeff Driskel's former teammates. But I really think that that's an intriguing name. I could see him ending up at Louisiana Tech. He's been around the block. And that's whenever you do have a young defensive coordinator, having some veteran coaches in his room is going to help. He needs to have some guys that there's some seasoned veterans that have seen it all, and that can help him. Another pro to Blake Baker in how much Manny Diaz thought of him, who was in the booth all season telling Manny Diaz what he was seeing up top. That was Blake Baker. And any coach on the field will tell you he's only as good as the guys in the box. And he was that defensive coach in the box. You've got Hargraves' bio pulled up on Houston. What stands out to you maybe the most? Scroll to the bottom. I'm sure it's going to have his coaching, where he's been. What stands out to you the most?
Well, Hargraves spent 3 years at South Florida. And in 2011, his defensive ends finished second nationally in tackles for loss and fourth nationally in sacks. And that D-line only allowed 107 rushing yards per game, which was 15th in the NCAA. In 2012, most of those numbers actually improved. The Bulls finished 17th nationally in total defense, 22nd in scoring defense. They only gave up 19 points per game, and this was in the Big East at the time. 22nd in rushing defense in 2012, finished in the top 25 in sacks, finished in the top 4 in sacks in the conference. So he also was at ECU. He was a special teams coach at ECU. So he's got special teams.
And he was at Miami before that and UConn before that. It looks like he may have been at UConn with Holtz.
Well, very well could have been. I'll have to look at those years and make sure that they match up, but I think so. And so if that's the case, I mean, you have to like what you read about his defensive lines because they bring pressure.
And he was linebacker coach this past season at Houston, and he was linebacker's coach at Miami, but he's been defensive ends coach for most of the 2000s.
Well, he went to back-to-back BCS national championships with Miami in 2001 and 2002. That defense, he was linebacker's coach at Miami. That defense gave up 9.4 points per game and won a national championship. Coaching staffs that included Hargraves have advanced to bowl games in 13 of the last 16 seasons now. So it's obvious that he knows what he's doing on the defensive side of the ball, whether it's D-line coaches, whether it's coaching D-line, or whether it's coaching linebackers.
Whenever you read all the stars align with this one.
Yeah, well, and not only that, but while Hargraves, which, you know, special teams was interesting for Tech this year, to say the least, and Ronnie Bradford right now coaches special teams
and corners
and. Who knows? Ronnie could very well see that assistant head coach position, that assistant head coach title more than anything, go to him to give him a little bit of a pay raise with the addition of some of these other guys, and Baker, of course, making more money as the defensive coordinator. Hargraves ran the special teams for 3 seasons under Holtz at USF while he was the linebackers coach. Linebackers coach is open right now. I think it wouldn't surprise me if maybe Hargraves started to help with special teams too.
Well, linebackers is not open. That's going to be
Blake
Baker.
Right. Defensive line is open. I apologize.
There's been a lot of criticism of Ronnie Bradford at special teams. Did I like the rugby-style punts? I didn't. That's probably my biggest complaint. You got a redshirt freshman kicker and a true sophomore punter. There's not many places in the country that are getting a lot of production out of young specialists.
Right. No, you're not. They're not. And you really can't ask. You almost can't ask too much of them because of their youth. And I would have liked to have seen. However, I would have liked to have seen. Special teams get better as the season progressed last year, and outside of the return game, it still really didn't. And that was the only concern that I had.
That is a valid concern, but on the same token, kickers' legs, and this is a real thing, kickers' legs get tired throughout the season.
Oh, sure.
And they just don't have the power in game 12 as they have in game 1, and that's just the nature of biology. So let's take this break. Other side of the break, we'll talk about the recruiting impact that these defensive coaching vacancies bring to the table. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. We'll be back right after this. Sun beat down. I hit the radio wall. I was driving. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. I am Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com and host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Jared, a couple of sponsors, and one more coaching name that's intriguing.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 is brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Y Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Cards, and Brister Smokehouse. Join us on the Keller Williams Parish Y Partners hotline at 888-993-7762. That's 888-993-7762. Or, of course, you can tweet us with the hashtag BTB Radio, and we'll answer your questions on the air.
Dare I say this one's more intriguing than Vernon Hargreaves?
Well, honestly, I think Hargreaves
stars align more than this one does.
Would seem to be maybe more realistic than this one, perhaps.
But it's still intriguing. Ron Cooper, former LSU defensive backs coach from 09 to 11, was at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in 2012. At South Florida from 13 until he was fired a couple of weeks ago by Willie Taggart. South Florida is kind of a dumpster fire right now, and I think they're looking for any fall guy that I can find.
Well, the defensive coordinator was let go as well at South Florida, so as well as the offensive coordinator.
But you look back through Cooper's past, he was a defensive coordinator in 03 at Mississippi State, defensive coordinator at UNLV in 1990, defensive coordinator at Murray State. He was an assistant coach at East Carolina in 89. I mean, this guy's been around for a long time. Notre Dame, 91 to 92. Head coach at Louisville, Eastern Michigan, and Alabama A&M.
Was DB's coach at Wisconsin in 02 and a defensive coordinator at Mississippi State in 03. The guy has
his credentials are impressive.
Yeah, but not only that. I mean, head coach, DB's coach, defensive coordinator, DB's coach, head coach. I mean, he's all over the place. Certainly has filled almost every position on the defensive side that you could hand him, as well as head coach too. So it would be interesting if it were Cooper.
In hindsight, you got to wonder a guy like this. He leaves. I think he left LSU on his own fruition and probably went to the NFL because the NFL came calling, and what coach doesn't listen when the NFL calls? I wonder if he wishes he would have stayed at LSU.
I don't know, hard to say. Some of these guys that make the jump to the NFL regret it pretty quickly. I mean, and he came back after one season, right back down to the college ranks.
And he stayed right there in Tampa.
And he stayed right there. So very well, maybe so. Regardless.
He replaced Howard Schnellenberger at Louisville. Those are some tough shoes to fill.
Cooper's defensive backs, at least, and now take these numbers with a grain of salt because South Florida is not – they're not what they were whatever year it was that they were close to the top. Regardless, 2013, they were 106th in pass efficiency defense, but – That's a total defense that was 71st in the country. They gave up 402 yards per game a season after finishing 30th in the country in that category. So they regressed under defensive coordinator Chuck Bresnahan, and that, I guess that was the reason why he was let go too. So, boy, like you said, it's a dumpster fire down there, and they're just trying to find a fall guy. Apparently the offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, and DB's coach have already seen the axe.
But you look at the – let's flip gears to the recruiting angle of these defensive coaches leaving, and we'll look at it from just – obviously just at the defensive prospects. Trey Spencer, who's been recruited by Blake Baker, obviously nothing to worry about there. James Jackson from Hainesville, I don't think James is going anywhere. Ephraim Kitchen is reportedly decommitted. He's never confirmed to me, so I've never pulled him off the list, but he reportedly decommitted before Manny even left. So he's likely gone unless Tech can get him back in the boat. Aaron Robertson from Shreveport, I think Tech's in okay position there. Johnny Shaw from Orange, Texas, plays at the same school as Trey Spencer, so it's another guy that Blake's been recruiting. I think Tech's in okay position there. He's the highest rated player on Tech's commitment board right now. The 6'1", 188-pound, three-star former TCU and Texas commitment. The ones that kind of concern me, maybe you go back to Aaron Robertson in at Huntington High School in Shreveport. If they start getting flirted with, and Aaron he won an award for maybe the best high school player in the city of Shreveport this year. So he's somebody to watch. LaDante Tavenport at Northwood and Shreveport, somebody to watch as possible decommitments. The defensive linemen are obviously, for obvious reasons, are some to look at. Jordan Bradford at St. Stanislaus and Bay St. Louis, I think, is okay. Theron Williams at St. Aug in New Orleans is okay. Brandon Brinson in Houma at Ellender High School, he'll be fine. TJ King, somebody to watch. I think he'll be okay, but he's somebody to watch. Emmanuel Turner at Magnolia High School up the road in Magnolia, Arkansas, I expect him to be just fine. Brandon Derman at Tyler Lee in Texas, I think he'll be just fine. Donald Freeman at Baton Rouge, Scotlandville, I think he'll be just fine. Colin Scott in Manville High School, I think there's nothing to worry about with him. Dante Williams at Parkway, I think that Texas in an okay position with him. And that's everyone.
Maybe Baker's biggest piece that he's been recruiting, though not on the defensive side of the ball, O'Shea Dugas. I don't think already he's playing on the offensive line, so I'm not necessarily sure that there was a whole lot of concern. But O'Shea Dugas was a big get for Tech at the offensive line position just because of his pure size. He's 6'5", nearly 300 pounds out of Northside. And Blake's staying. Blake was recruiting him. So, again,
and O'Shea Luke was also in recruiting him, so they kind of tag-teamed. But you talk about O'Shea Dugas on the offensive line. He's one of the most recent commitments, and he's one of the most intriguing on the entire list. A 5A state champion wrestler at 6'5", 290. If you can bend and wrestle at 6'5", 290, you can bend and play tackle.
Oh, no doubt about it. I think O'Shea Dugas was a really good pickup for Louisiana Tech.
If he's 310, 320, he may be going anywhere in the world he wants.
Right.
But because he's a wrestler, he's probably never let himself get that big. Because he wrestles close to probably 280, 285. I don't know the wrestling classes. I'm not up on my high school wrestling. Pardon me. There's not a whole lot going on in North Central Louisiana of high school wrestling.
Right.
There's a little in Northwest Louisiana, but not much in North Central. We'll make that zero. But recruiting-wise, I still really like this class. Even if they lose a couple of commitments, the offensive line, especially when you lost your offensive line coach, you've already filled him. And that's something that's happened since the last show. McFarland from Kapiah Lincoln is the offensive line coach. The other finalist for the job, Rob Sale from McNeese, former Neville Tiger and LSU Tiger, got the job at Georgia. So Skip Holtz was on two good ones.
Yeah, yeah. I think McFarland will be all right. Has a lot of experience, that's for sure. He was at Kapiah Lincoln.
Another former head coach.
Right. He was the head coach at Stephen F. Austin, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So he was head coach at Stephen F. Austin before moving to Iowa State as offensive coordinator, offensive line coach. He's been at UCF, been at Kent State. He was a graduate assistant at Notre Dame.
At the same time Holtz was there.
He's an older guy. And I think maybe that plays into Skip's advantage, actually. I think it plays into his favor because McFarland, you know,
I think he had a sickness.
And so he's back in it. He had spent the one season at Copiah Lincoln. Now he's at Tech and looks like someone who could actually stay around for a while. And I think with, you know, going back to Blake Baker, I think Skip Holtz dropped some hints at who it would be, or not necessarily who it would be, but he wanted someone who was going to play with the same philosophy. He also said that it didn't necessarily matter so much about experience, it was philosophy. And then he also said that the players have four defensive coordinators in 4 years, and that they're the only constant in this, and so it would be nice to have someone, you know, who was going to stay around for a little while. And so I think all of those signs indicated that Blake Baker would probably be the one who got it. Especially once Oscar Giles moved on.
And the whole time this has been going on BleedTechBlue.com, I was telling everybody, it looks like it's going to either be co-DC, and then whenever Giles left, it was going to be a DC. I don't even know how long the co-DC thing was going. I was just being told that that's the way that they were leaning. Going back to recruiting for just a brief second, Jamar Smith, the quarterback commitment out of Meridian, Mississippi. The Meridian, Mississippi newspaper did put a story out, I believe this week or last week, it might have been late last week, that he will likely not sign on signing day, that he's weighing his options. That kind of thing always happens.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt about it. Now, of course,
and then you always have the people who just start railing on the kids.
Some will say, "Well, if you're not going to sign on signing day, then you must not want to be here bad enough, and so we don't want you." And blah blah blah.
Unfortunately, or fortunately, whichever side of the fence you stand on this issue, it's the nature of the beast.
Exactly.
The NCAA has created this. With no early signing period, you've got to hold your place. If you don't hold your place somewhere, you may not have anywhere to go come signing day.
Exactly. No doubt about it. And so that's what happens with a lot of these kids who may be on the brink of possibly, you know, a Power 5 offer or something like that at a school that's going to give them a legitimate chance to see the field. And so when you're at a school like Tech, who is not necessarily a destination school for a lot of these guys, you hold your spot knowing that you have the potential to possibly move up. Well, and that's just how it goes.
Oh, absolutely. And while we're on a quarterback, we had the opportunity to have a conference call with Jeff Driscoll, and the thing that stood out probably the most out of the entire thing to me was when somebody from Florida Today, I believe, asked him the question, was it like being recruited all over again? And he said, no, not really. At this point, I've already been in big-time college football, and I don't know exactly what his words were, but it was basically this: I can't be wowed by somebody's locker room and weight room.
Right, exactly. And he mentioned that. What he mentioned was what mattered the most to him was the pieces that were around him, how good of a person Skip Holtz, everyone said that Skip and Peterson were. And you could tell that he was obviously mature. And that was one of the biggest takeaways that I had, was that he seemed like a very mature young man for his age.
But like I keep saying, I really do like this recruiting class. They got a lot of pieces that they've been needing for years. All high school offensive linemen. There's not a single junior college player in this entire class, which I haven't gone back and studied. But in my recent memory of covering Louisiana Tech recruiting, I can't think of a single year that Louisiana Tech hasn't signed one single junior college player. And Tech's been served well by junior college players. Heck, Tim Rattay was a junior college player.
Sure.
But you don't build a program that way.
No, well, exactly. Most junior college players are stopgap measures. And if you've been able to put together some, if you've been able to put together some, you know, consecutive seasons of recruiting, then you don't have to go the JUCO route. And I think that's what Skip Holtz, everything that Skip Holtz is doing, regardless of whether or not you were a fan of him before this year or after this year or whatever is the case, the things that Skip Holtz is doing indicate that he plans on being here at Louisiana Tech for several years.
A little bit of a soapbox. Several times. We both did.
Yeah, sure. Of course. Wouldn't it be Bleed Tech Blue Radio.
It would not be Bleed Tech Blue Radio if there wasn't multiple soapboxes to be stood on. We do our thing. The producer's even agreeing with us.
John agrees.
Oh, it's true.
Hey, what was that? Real fast, what was that question you asked me on Facebook today, and I wanted you to ask me on the air?
This is just a complete random thought, but what are the chances that maybe Brandon Harris would move back up to the I-20 corridor?
And my response to you was this. Last year at this time, imagine thinking Jeff Driscoll was transferring to Louisiana Tech.
Anything's possible.
That's exactly what I told him.
I mean, you got the perfect stopgap.
And you really, Price Wilson is not that kind of quarterback, and I'm not saying that just because he's not, you go find another one just like Driscoll. But Holtz has proven that he can cater an offense around his players. I mean, the year before last, Ryan Higgins ran a little bit. This past year, they only ran against UTEP because UTEP could not play the zone read.
Correct. And they took advantage of that.
Let's just go ahead and say that I'm three Bills, and I could have run the zone read against UTEP.
Yeah, feeding me the fake.
Man, that's a bad mental image. We'll go ahead and leave it at that. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio, ESPN Radio 97.7. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio and ESPN Radio 97.7. I was too busy giving people bad mental images that I forgot to preview Kane McGuire, Sports Information Director for Louisiana Tech Basketball, joining us in this segment. Got a couple of big games at home for the Bulldogs. We'll preview those with Kane, but after some sponsors.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7, brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Y Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Brister Smokehouse. Join us on the Keller Williams Parish Y Partners hotline, 888-993-7762. That's 888-993-7762.
Kane, you had a good road trip, I would say.
Yeah, I enjoyed my trip to Texas very much.
And also Mississippi?
Yeah, Mississippi was good too, but back to be home in Louisiana and have two home games.
I would imagine so. When you look at the UTEP game, really stands out probably to everybody. That was probably one that many Bulldog fans had concerns for, and the Bulldogs go in and take care of business. What stood out to you for the reason for so much success?
Sure, and you know, fans rightfully so had a reason to think that way. You know, you go back to last year when we went out to UTEP. You know, we were so overwhelmed, it seemed like, with their size and their girth, and just being and playing in the Don Haskins Center, a place where very few teams go in and win. It's very intimidating. It's a very raucous crowd and a very tough place to play. So, you know, we knew going in, with it just being our second game in conference and UTEP's third, how big of a game it was, even this early in league play. You could sense it from the tip, you know, the energy and the enthusiasm and just the focus of both teams. And they both knew how big of a game it was. And so just for the Bulldogs to go in there and, you know, that they got off to a really good start, got a 9-point lead in the first half, but UTEP was able to drain some threes late and bank one in right there before halftime to tie it up. But, you know, man, they regrouped and they just locked in that second half and put on a defensive show for the ages.
I would say that a concern for Coach White and his staff are maybe the first half, finishing the first half how they started. Is against UTSA. UTSA gets the last second three and gets a 1-point lead going into halftime. Is that something you think that has been an area of focus this week?
Yeah, I think so. You know, the coaches knew, you know, I gave them some stats about, you know, some of our second half woes on the road. You know, you go back to, you know, the losses, the tough losses we had in non-conference, whether it be Temple or, you know, NC State and even Syracuse when we were down one. You know, we were leading at halftime in all of those games except being down one at Syracuse. And, you know, for whatever reason, the second half, just the numbers and the effort just weren't quite the same as the first half. So it's definitely been a point of emphasis and been really refreshing to see in these through these first three league games the guys playing so hard and playing so well for that second half of the game.
And really the bench has come around big time, and I think that's a lot to do with that second half. I mean, you look at Jacoby Boykins with some huge threes Saturday against UTSA, and Xavier Stapleton played well against UTEP, and we've talked about it really all season that Tech would be looking to not replace but find somebody to pick up the missing scoring from Keon McNeil, and I have been saying that it looked like it was going to have to come from more than one, and there was plenty of candidates for that, and so far that's been true.
Sure. I mean, this team was very fortunate to have, you know, veteran seniors coming off the bench last year, and Keon and Cordarius, and I mean, these are guys that four-year players coming off the bench for you that, you know, they were in the system, they were mature, that they knew what they were going to do, and they were going to give, they were going to do whatever you asked them to do. And here we are this year, we knew we had talent. It's just that talent coming off the bench were now freshmen and junior college players that haven't had a lot of, you know, D1 experience. So we knew it would take time for those guys to come around, but boy, they're certainly showing it. You go even talk about Xavier Stapleton and what he was able to do in his own backyard at Southern Miss and knocking down 4 3-pointers, and you mentioned Jacoby Boykins coming up huge against UTSA. Those guys are definitely coming around.
And then one guy you're still waiting to come around a little bit, maybe Janiah White, but bigs take longer to come around than your wings and your guards.
Sure, and of course, you know, we're a guard-oriented team, so more than likely we're going to be playing 3-4 guards at a time, and you just have the big 6'10 guy, and Michael Kaiser, who's, you know, come on really strong and performing so well his senior year. You know, he's getting 30-plus minutes a game, so you know, you're just trying to find spots where you can throw in a Leo Edwards and a Janiah White there at the 5 to give Mike some rest or in case he's in foul trouble. So the pieces are there. It's just a matter of just knowing when you need to use them.
And this week, Thursday, of course, the first game, and then finally the big one Saturday with all the promotions. Talk about Thursday's game.
Yeah, I mean, you look at this game, and of course, it's for early position atop the conference standings. You know, these are two of the three teams that are 3-0 in conference right now, with La Tech and UAB. And you look at UAB's non-conference schedule, and it was just brutal. It had to be one of the best strength of schedules in the country, playing LSU and Wisconsin and Florida and North Carolina and UCLA. I mean, it's just murderer's row of people, and here they are. You know, they're really young and have some inexperience, but that non-conference schedule must have really helped them. They were able to go up to Middle and win there, which is a tough place to play at the Murphy Center. Then they swept the Florida school. So big opportunity. You know, we've never even hosted UAB at home. All five times that we've ever played the Blazers have been in Birmingham, and last year was the first time we even beat them. So that's definitely a big game at 7 p.m. on Thursday, and then, of course, the Operation Sellout / Whiteout on Saturday at 3 p.m. against Middle Tennessee. Just both two huge opportunities for the Bulldogs to play in front of their home crowd.
And talk about those promotions surrounding the Whiteout / Operation Sellout.
Sure. A lot of stuff going on. Obviously, with the first 2,000 fans in attendance, get a free Whiteout t-shirt, which Coach White is a huge fan of. Being sarcastic there, he hates them. he just can't stand to see his face on a picture or on a t-shirt. Free jambalaya at the main entrance pregame for fans, free pizza for students. It's going to be a lot of students hopefully in the building, with it being a Greek day, and there's also Scout Day and La Tech Legends Day and whatnot. So,
and then honoring the 84-85 team, correct?
Yeah. You know, it's been 30 years since that legendary 84-85 team played, and so it's an honor to honor them. And it'd just be a great game. Obviously, anybody who's in the in the arena last year for Operation Sellout against Marshall, where there was over 7,000 people in there. It was just absolutely electric. There's nothing quite like a basketball game with that type of atmosphere. So hopefully people show up and have some fun watching the Bulldogs.
Absolutely, Kane. Appreciate you coming on and joining us.
Thanks, guys.
Kay McGuire, Louisiana Tech Sports Information Director for Basketball, joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Jared, I'm excited about this week. UAB, this quite possibly one of the last times you'll see the Blazers in the Thomas Assembly Center for the foreseeable future, with them likely leaving the conference, with them dropping football. And then Saturday should be unbelievable.
Right. Well, last year against Marshall, the crowd was electric. It was an unbelievable atmosphere. The best in the Tech, of course, that I've ever been to. And it made a real difference. There's no doubt about it. And then, of course, because it was, it was later in conference play then, but the crowds after that were all really good too. And then, of course, the Tulsa game was just, again, unbelievable.
And then Iona, you weren't there, but right. Iona is the best atmosphere inside the Thomas Assembly Center that I've ever witnessed in the last over 10 years that I've been going to Louisiana Tech basketball
games. I think the Bulldogs did they did themselves a favor by winning those first three conference road games. I expected, honestly, I'll be honest. I expected them to lose to UTEP.
I think we all did.
I expected them to lose to UTEP, the size of UTEP. I expected them to take advantage and, of course, out-rebound them. I was surprised at maybe not necessarily that they won, but how they won against UTEP. Only 12 points in the second half, played good defense. Mike White had just said that he was going to have to give it up and embrace the fact that this team was more offensive minded than defensive, as his teams usually are. And then they come out and play really sound defense against UTEP. Of course, that was sandwiched by a win over Southern Miss squad that's down this year, and then UTSA. And they shot well from three. They shot really well from three against UTSA. They were 100% against UTEP from the free throw line. I mean, even if they only are shooting 7 or 8, it's still 100%. So a lot of positives to take from it, no doubt about it.
When you look at their three wins in conference play, beat Southern Miss by 13 on the road, beat UTEP by 13 on the road, and beat UTSA by 12 on the road.
Kind of interesting how they
and
were.
And then what's crazy is Southern Miss is bad.
Yeah, Southern Miss is bad.
So Tech going in there and winning is not a surprise, like you said.
But Southern Miss shot 60-something percent from the field.
What they did in El Paso was dreadful. 75-40. They were run out of the building. Southern Miss shooting 21% from three.
Wow.
30% from the field.
Wow, 30% from the field. Gosh.
Against Louisiana Tech, Southern Miss shot 34% from 52% from three, and 62% from the field.
Exactly. Shot 62% from the field and still lost by 13. That's how bad that Southern Miss defense is. Southern Miss is down this year. They're bad. Part of it has to do, of course, with Tindall, and then, it was nothing but JUCO playing for Southern Miss, too. But regardless, I think both of these games for Louisiana Tech this week at home are certainly winnable games. Like Kane mentioned, UAB played an unbelievable gauntlet of out-of-conference scheduling at the beginning of the season. Really, really rough schedule. But UAB is undefeated to start conference play, too. So they beat the Florida schools, so it'll be interesting.
Coming back for the final segment of Bleed Tech Blue Radio tonight, we'll talk a little bit more basketball. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com. Jared, a couple of sponsors, then we'll talk more Commerce USA basketball.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 brought to you by Keller Williams Parish White Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Brister Smokehouse. Join us during this last segment on the Keller Williams Parish White Partners hotline at 888-993-7762. That's 888-993-7762. Or, of course, you can tweet your questions to us with the hashtag BTB Radio.
You know, we haven't talked about the lady texters, and I – think we need to.
We would be remiss not to mention the hot start that the Lady Texters have had. Had a three-game home opener and lost the first one in overtime to Southern Miss, but then beat the two Texas schools, UTEP and – well, excuse me, I guess there's three Texas schools, but UTEP and UTSA
There's four Texas schools.
North Texas, UTSA, UTEP, and
– Rice.
Oh, Rice. I forgot about Rice.
But it, what Tyler Summitt's been able to do with this team in such a short amount of time – is nothing short of remarkable.
Well, you know, they're still looking for consistency on the defensive side of the ball, but they.
But you look at how many games he's played on the road.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's been.
What was wrong with the person who made this schedule?
Well, we know what was wrong with the person that made the schedule.
That schedule is anything but set up for success.
I'll tell you what,
they played five games in a row on the road. Five out of the first seven games were on the road.
They're sitting at 7-7 right now. Is that right? Having played your first five on the road, they're still 7-7?
Yes.
They're 7-7, 2-1 in conference. I'll tell you why. It's because Keyless Shelton has played so good. During those three games, of course, she was named Conference USA Women's Basketball Player of the Week for the second time already this season this week. She led Tech to wins over UTEP and UTSA, averaging 25.5 points and 7 rebounds while shooting 48% from the field, 6 of 10 from 3, and 15 of 16 from the free throw line. She had 28-10 in only 22 minutes against UTEP, and that was the first, first loss for the UTEP so far this season, their only league loss so far this season.
Well, when you look at Whitney Frazier averaging 15.4 points a game and then Keyless Shelton at 15.1 points a game, there's your answer. You got to get production out of your two senior offensive weapons.
No doubt.
And they are. Tierra Davenport with 9.1 points a game, Jaquan Jackson with 9.1 points a game. Crustacia Walter with 7.1 points a game. I thought she probably had her best game as a Lady Texter Saturday. That's the best I've seen her play. So they're getting a lot better, and all credit goes to Coach Summitt and his staff. I like I said, I can't get over how much they've done in such a short period of time. And the sky's the limit for those guys.
Yeah, they've become relevant again. And it hasn't taken him long to do it. Personally, I thought this would be another pretty down year. And conference play just started. But really, this is a conference that's wide open. That they were predicted to finish somewhere near the middle of the pack based on what they did last season. So that's obviously – I mean, it's not a great women's basketball conference.
But it's not terrible.
But it's exactly. It's
you've got
not
a top
terrible.
25 member,
right?
And so in Western Kentucky.
So what I'm thinking is that there's no. I think Louisiana Tech has a chance, just as good a chance as anybody, to come out on top in that conference.
You talk about top 25 in Western Kentucky. Old Dominion on the men's side had gotten up to number 25 in the country, go into Bowling Green, Kentucky, and lost to Western Kentucky. I personally think this conference race is going to end up a four horse race.
With
UTEP, Louisiana Tech, Western Kentucky, and Old Dominion.
Right. And it would have been something if Old Dominion would have continued to win in conference play and then Louisiana Tech was able to beat Old Dominion, that would have been a much better win for them as far as, you know, strength of schedule and the like, because Old Dominion's got some good wins and they've got some, as good as a loss can be, they've got some good losses. They've got some close losses and against some really good teams. I think Old Dominion has surprised most everybody this year so far.
Beat LSU this year.
Yeah, they did.
In a tournament, I think, in the island somewhere. A holiday time tournament around Thanksgiving. So this league is probably better top to bottom than it was last year. It was a two-horse race last year.
Well, it was still a tri-champion.
True.
It was Middle Tennessee. I mean, Middle Tennessee was there as well.
I guess it was a four-horse race last year, too, with UTEP, Southern Miss, Tulsa, and Louisiana Tech.
Well, and Middle Tennessee.
And Middle Tennessee. So I guess it was maybe a little better than last year.
Maybe so. But Middle Tennessee.
And UAB is doing better, so they may be the number five.
Right. Middle Tennessee actually has played UAB already this season. Tech plays UAB Thursday night and then plays Middle Tennessee Saturday afternoon.
And Middle Tennessee is another one, just like Southern Miss, with under Tindall, that was very JUCO heavy.
And right now they're sitting at 7-7, and they lost to UAB 54-49. They shot 26% in that game from the field and 19% in the second half. And that's not because UAB's defense is good. So take from that what you will, but UAB is sitting at 5-9 over. Was sitting at 5-9 overall when they played them, but they played. They had played a tough schedule. But UAB's a young team. UAB's a young team, and they played differently than they did last year. They're shooting the three a lot this year. It'll be interesting.
Have you seen Marshall's record? 4-12. They're struggling. They've lost six in a row. Western Kentucky has the longest streak in the league of wins at 5 in a row. Southern Miss has also lost 6 in a row. So it could be a very top-heavy conference this year. I'm looking forward to, like I said, the game Thursday night against UAB and then Saturday against Middle Tennessee. It's a nationally televised broadcast Saturday, but if you're within driving distance of Ruston, Louisiana, I think they've got around 2,000 tickets left. Make sure you're making your way to the Thomas Assembly Center. And if you haven't been in that place when it's rocking, it's fun. There's no other way to say it other than that. It's just fun.
Well, it's great. I really, honestly, basketball, for me, especially when the atmosphere is like that, is the best sport to watch live.
Well, you don't have to. You're getting no arguments from me. My favorite sport is college basketball.
Right. Well, of course.
And it's not even close. Because there's parity. And there's no parity. There's parity in college baseball.
I think this year showed there was a little bit of parity in college football.
How?
I think it showed there was a little bit of parity in college football.
How?
Same. Well, I mean, the way the playoff ended up working out, I thought was certainly to the advantage of, you know, Jeff Long and that committee. With because if it was still the BCS, you'd have Alabama versus Florida State. Both of them lost in the semifinal.
Well, I'm talking about parity outside of the Power Five. There's none.
But what you said was that there was no parity in college football. To that point, I say
when you take it into account, there's 120 something teams, and there's five power conferences, and that's probably half the teams. The majority are not being competitive, so there's no parity in college football.
Yeah,
not like the 300 plus teams in college basketball. But I digress.
Right.
This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Next week we'll be here the same time, same place. Hope you join us. We'll be back.
Listening to Bleed Tech Blue Radio with Jonathan Ford. Listen to Bleed Tech Blue Radio every Tuesday at 6 p.m. on ESPN 97.7.